This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit menstclinic.com. That's menstclinic.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. A couple of other quick notes I didn't get to mention just a minute ago. The Ravens agreed to a deal with former Rams offensive tackle Joseph Noteboom. I think that is of note because he went to Plano Senior. So local kid right there.
Did it cover him?
No, that was after. Yeah. And then for the Texans, it looks like Tank Dell is going to be out for the entirety of the season. And for the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes' half-brother is getting a tryout with the team. So there you go. Now you're caught up on football things. Let's talk about baseball things. Go ahead and give me cut number 7, and let's talk about those Texas Rangers.
Open stance for Seager. 0-1. Swinging a hot shot on the ground. Pass the dive of Rivas in a right field, a base hit. One run scores. Smith rounds third. The throw is late. He dives in safely. Corey Seager with a two-run single, and the Rangers take a 2-1 lead in the bottom of the third.
So the Rangers get a desperately needed victory yesterday. Fair to say? Desperately needed?
Sure. Absolutely. This team, they were spiraling. Like, that was an out-of-control spiral, and I don't know that this changed anything. I really don't, because even moving on from your offensive coach, your hitting coach, like, that could be a definite, maybe nothing happens.
Yeah.
But it did kind of put things on pause a little bit and give them a day off and then to refresh. Hopefully that's what they do.
Look, and you can go back and be like, hey, guess what happened after the last time we had an offensive eruption? So you scored 15 runs, and in the ensuing 4 games, you lost all of them and scored 3 runs.
Yeah.
So, like, by no means am I saying this is going to be fixed, but I'm intrigued by, I get why Donnie Ecker is out, the hitting coach / offensive coordinator. He has been fired. I get that. But you didn't just start struggling offensively this year.
Nope.
You struggled offensively last year.
And you had hires.
Yes.
Who was the guy that was your hitting coach on the way to a World Series where you slugged the hell out of the ball for a long I mean, granted, there was that window at the end of the season where they didn't look like they could hit the ball again, and somehow they were able to win games. But yeah, it was the same. It was a different guy then.
Look, we've talked about this numerous times, and I'll agree with him. If the Stars win the Stanley Cup, I will put aside my idea of momentum at the end of the regular season translating into the playoffs ever again with the Stars and the Rangers. But I understand why he got let go. You needed to do something. Chris Young, when he was on with G-Bag, talked about losing patience. Later in the week, we heard that something drastic could be afoot, and I know this is the person who logically is going to lose his job, but how long do you get into it before you have to rethink other things and maybe be like, hey, maybe the players we did put together all, not like Corey Seager and people like that, but maybe a lot of them did have a show out 2023 season. Maybe the struggles of this year and the struggles going back to last year aren't just because we were able to scapegoat a hitting
coach. Yeah, maybe some of these guys are, maybe their bat speed's a little slower than it was a couple years ago. Maybe they're different hitters altogether than they were. Maybe we had a career year 2 years ago. And that was the struggle that Chris Young had last year, right? Was, why would I trade these guys? Obviously, they did it once.
Right.
We had career. So maybe that was the apex for some of those guys. And now we haven't been able, with like a Jock and some of these other guys, it hasn't worked out. I mean, even Jake Berger in his situation.
Oh,
too.
Yeah. Jake a lot of changes. And Jock Peterson have just been horrendous. Now, one good sign is Josh Smith has played tremendously, so much so that maybe tomorrow we'll just give him a new position. Wyatt Langford has played tremendously, and it looks like he's on that path to continue his growth. Corey Seager has picked it up and is starting to look really good. Of course, the issue there is he's missed a lot of time because of injury. But the two people that you brought in, you just mentioned, in Berger and Jock Peterson, they were supposed to solve a very specific issue that this team had, and that is hitting fastballs.
Yep.
We had a nightmarish time, and that's one of the reasons you moved off of your first baseman, because you're like, oh, Nate Lowe, he can't hit fastballs, and so we're going to send him away, bring in Berger and Peterson, and that's going to change things. Well, Berger and Peterson have been horrible to start the year. You sent Jake Berger down because you had the option to. Rest assured, if they could have just sent Jock Peterson down with no problems, that absolutely would have happened. And so what I'm concerned about is I'm hoping we bump back up. But we're far enough into the season, and you look at last season where you're like, all right, what's next? What if this doesn't work?
Yeah, then and you don't have the money to do much
true
adjusting with it. So then the other option is let's see what our farm system has. And I mean, quite honestly, some of these guys are in the farm system for a reason. They aren't quite there yet, or they never will be, or they have a lot of growth to do and they're not ready and prepared for Major League Baseball. Some of them are, some of them you're seeing it now. Like Justin Foscue is a name, Kevin, that you brought up with Jared last week. And he was like, got a lot of limited ways to get him in there and a lot
because
of different
he doesn't
areas.
Have position.
Yeah,
flex.
Exactly. So it's it is kind of a tough place for Chris Young to be in, but he at this moment, Kevin, and he's already done it three times, at least in the last 4 days. At this moment, it's time for him to be cutthroat with his decisions and make these very difficult and tough decisions. And those come along with a lot of conversation with Boach about what he's seeing and what they think they can do. But you got to do it quickly and get this thing turned around at some point and find some way for these guys to liven back up, go up to the plate and create opportunities for themselves to be on base. Not opportunities for themselves to let a pitcher take advantage of them.
And I did see somebody's text. Sometimes the semantics in baseball get confusing because, like, Chris Young is not technically called the general manager, but he does things that you ascribe to general manager. And so I know there's another person who technically has the position of hitting coach.
Oh, yeah.
But offensive coordinator encompasses that.
Right.
And so, like, that's why they moved off of him, because he essentially was the hitting coach more or less.
Yeah, somebody did ask this morning if the Stars offensive coordinator could become our offensive coordinator. And I was like, I don't know how that'll work, but
yeah,
they know how to put up goals in a flurry. So,
man, do they ever. And I get, again, I get why they moved on from him. Now, somebody asked the question about Leody Taveras. Now, there's a couple of things at play here. From the 2-4, why did the Rangers put Taveras on outright waivers? Was there an internal problem? I don't think so. As far as I know, and I feel like we're usually pretty well plugged in, it wasn't anything about that. It's just his bat remained mediocre while his defense regressed.
But the other part is, why didn't you trade him?
Look,
trade value was not there.
You can't trade him now, but to your question, I feel like that's something we preached ad nauseum in spring training. It was 4 point at a time when I think the Rangers have like $5.5 million to spend, something like that, that they want to stay under the luxury tax apron. That is a decision by the ownership group, not by Major League Baseball, not by me. I don't think you're going to change their mind. All right. So you've got about $5.5 million that you had capable of spending. Well, we talked about it. If you could have moved off of Leody Taveras, maybe you could have figured out a way to keep Kirby Yates or by going multi-year or something like that. Or maybe you could have figured out a way to bring in other like high end or higher monetary bullpen pieces. Or maybe you could have just made the trade and brought in a cheap bullpen piece. Look, these are all things we talked about a lot in spring training. I don't know why the Rangers didn't do it then. I certainly don't know why they didn't do it now. In terms of trading him now, it's because the value is not there. Because what did you have? You had a light hitting center fielder who was a defensive whiz. All right. But now if I told you you had a light hitting center fielder who was maybe average defensively, not a lot of appeal there.
Had Evan Carter been healthy,
maybe
this would have probably looked a lot different heading into the season and where we are right now. Not necessarily at the plate, but for him and where he is.
That's possible. And maybe you just think in terms of outfield depth, they've gotten more out of Pilar,
yeah,
maybe, that they anticipated. Like, I think that's another part of it.
He's looking like he could start some more.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that this eminently means that Evan Carter is coming back. I still think part of this is a financial move. So again, I told you, $5.5 million. Over the next 2 days, we'll find out. I am willing to wager that nobody is going to pick up Leody Taveras. If they do, that will eat the $3.25 million, give or take $3.3 million, that was left on his contract. So all of a sudden, you take that off the books, and I know it's not a ton, but instead of 5.5, give or take, maybe you have $8.8 million. And remember, if you do something at the trade deadline, that's kind of a prorated salary, closer to like half of the season. So now you got a whole lot of players that are in your scope if you wanted to make a deal where you took on money, where the ownership could still stay below the tax apron so they can reset. And essentially, shorthand version of that is, if you do it 3 years in a row, your penalties go up, like percentage-wise, they go up. And so the Rangers are like, hey, let's stay under that, wipe the board clean, go back to zero. That's not to say next year they'll spend all of the money, but you'll be penalized less if you spend all of the money.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of talking about this, I think, on Saturday with somebody regarding Ray Davis. He opened up the checkbook to build the team to a championship winner. Like, he did that then, and then he kind of scaled it back a little bit. I don't know if there's ever going to be another moment of, you know what, now is the time again. They tried to spend from the designer bin at the Goodwill
right
this offseason.
Right.
And it didn't quite work out for them so far, so now they got to figure out a different plan. And then you got to take that plan to the boss that has the money,
yeah,
and say, all right, so here's what I want to do. And he's going to sit there and nitpick every single thing that you decision you made so far, and why isn't that working? And you're like, don't forget about that World Series I gave to you 2 years ago. Let me do my thing. And so that's the kind of the hope. But as you said, there's a very small margin of money to deal with at the moment.
And for the 214, you know, we talked about this earlier in the segment. Peterson and Berger aren't hitting either. I don't know if you missed it or if you're saying that for, like, why not waive them? Berger, you don't have to, just because you dropped him back down to the minors and you had that option. For Peterson, that's a non-starter because...
What, $17 million, $18
million? Per year. And you're under, I think next year's a player option. Well, guess what? I would be willing to wager that he goes ahead and takes that player option since he's hitting like 100 or lower than that. And so that's a non-starter. To tell the ownership group where you're struggling to get money, you're going to be like, hey, I want to take that $36 million you just spent and send it away.
Yeah.
At least with Taveras, you've seen him on the team for multiple years. Now, from the 469, two different 469s, this is what I'm hoping for. With all due respect to Evan Carter, Alejandro Osuna, because what we're probably going to try to do tomorrow.
This is your dude.
Yes, we're going to try to put Josh Smith in center field full time, then have Wyatt Langford in left, and then bring Osuna up to right field. But how's he been doing? The guy who, Alec, would you agree, certainly one of the stories of spring training, right?
I was excited every time I heard his name because I knew it was going to be something good.
Oh, my.
So.
Oh, my.
Corey, that's a good oh, my, right?
Absolutely, okay. It is.
He's played 25 games thus far in the minors at Frisco. Fair to say, like, look, whether you think that's a big sample size or not, that it's literally all we have going. What is he at, Corey?
He's batting average is .317. His slugging is .387.
On base percentage.
His slugging is .462, and his OPS is an .848 right now. He's got 13 RBI, only a couple home runs, but he's not a power hitter. Like, that's not his thing. He's going to get on base, and he's going to get you doubles. He's going to be on base, and he can run like the wind.
And what?
He's aggressive.
Did everybody, especially Bochy, say about him in spring training? That's true.
He's kept saying he's the kind of guy that, like, he forces me to put him in.
And he's a ball player. Now, I know some people get annoyed by that cliche, but that is definitely a thumbs up from a coach. If they're like, he's just a ball player, they're like, that means they like him a ton. So I would be intrigued by that move. I don't know if that is what the Rangers are thinking, and we're trying to get down to the bottom of that, but I would not rule that out in all of these situations. And then for the 858, why not trade Peterson since he had that option? Wouldn't somebody take him? All right. That's a fair question. And if you think the Rangers have bungled this whole thing, You probably can. But again, you're going to eat at least half of that money to send him anywhere. But what I think is more likely is a team's going to be like, he's hitting 100 and I'm still on the hook almost 2 years, $18 million per. Mm-hmm. No thanks.
And, you know, I'm not saying he's a bad teammate, but there are thoughts on the fact that he's been at some places and there's been some questions about work ethic and things like that.
Spicy.
So that's happened too. And, you know, news travels.
Yeah.
News travels. And if you're a GM and you're like, do I really want to add that to my locker room? But I think the most important thing, though, is that batting average, where it stands right now. That's the one that you can't trade.
The KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, we move into the expressway. We will talk with USA Today Major League Baseball columnist Bob Nightingale. We're also going to give away tickets to Nelly. And next, Dallas Stars TV host and Emmy Award winner Ryan Ray right here on The Fan. KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan right now. Let's bring to you, oh man, Emmy Award winner, Stars broadcaster, the man that I think knows everything about hockey. It is Brian Ray. Good morning, sir.
Gentlemen, good to talk to you. I am in my car, so you just let me know when I need to put my turn signal on for this one, and we'll be ready to rock here.
Well, I did already say good morning, and it's clearly the afternoon, so it's okay. It happens to the best of us.
Kevin, when I texted Brian to ask him to hop on the show, he said, what do you want to talk about? And I was like, oh, no, Cowboy Mouth, his favorite band, and he said, then yes, I can do it. So we might have to divert a little bit from the hockey.
My first questions have nothing to do with that and are just about hockey. All right. I know we need to reflect on game 7, but bold take / Jake Ottinger appreciation post. Going into this series, the Stars have the goaltending advantage. What say you?
Ooh, I'm going to call it a 50-50 split right now. And it for me, it might be the most – first of all, how happy is Mikko Rantanen to start a playoff series and he doesn't have to answer questions about playing his former team?
Oh, yes. We don't have to hear
My
it either,
God.
Yeah.
This, he got absolutely blasted for 7 games of that question, and he never wavered, handled it as classy as anybody could. I was rather impressed watching him on game days and morning skates – dealing with the questions he had at his locker room stall. But I think the Jake Ottinger, Connor Hellebuck storyline might be the most intriguing storyline of this series to start, at least. And I would not be surprised if it's Jake Ottinger's turn to start getting just burned with questions left and right of American goaltending, the Four Nations, Olympics next year. If Jake wins this series, you know, is he the front runner as Team USA's number one in the Olympics next year? Is it still Connor Hellebuck? There's a really intriguing storyline with those two. So I'm not surprised that you certainly bring them up. It is going to be very interesting to watch the goaltending in this one.
And I wanted to talk about Ottinger a little bit more. Like, I certainly understand how the other day so much focus on Roope and obviously tons of focus, and rightfully so, on Mikko Rantanen. But I don't want it to be left to the side how freaking good Ottinger was over these last 3 games, even despite the just catastrophes that happen at times in game 6. He really has been on point and was on point in game 7.
So the opinion I've been sort of developing on Jake Ottinger this season, because I think we're deep enough into his career that we have a large enough sample size. I do think there's a little bit of streakiness to Jake Ottinger's regular season game. Now, when the streaks are a little bit down, we're talking about it's still above average. It's top 15 in the league. I mean, this is a really good problem to have. But when he's on one of those streaks where he's up, he's a world beater. I mean, we call him Angry Otter, Brent Severin and I, but he's a mammoth beast. When you look at his playoff career, the eye test is there and the number data is there. His numbers in games 1-4 are okay. His numbers in game 5-7 are freakishly good.
Yeah.
It's like a 925 save percentage now, and I think the goals against is a little over two. He's now 3-1 in his career in game sevens, and the one loss, he had to stop 60-plus shots in an overtime loss that nearly stole a seven-game series from the Calgary Flames a handful of years ago. So his game seven numbers are even better from his games, you know, 5-7. The thing with Jake Ottinger, and you always want your goaltender to just play lights out all the time to be the most unbelievable beast, you know, for 82 games in a full playoff run, but humans are humans. He has the rise to the occasion gene so far in his career. I think we've seen it enough times in big regular season games, later in playoff series, and in game seven, that when the chips go all in, when the money in the briefcase gets opened up and placed on the table, he does not flinch. That is a phenomenal quality to have in a goaltender. It doesn't guarantee you a Stanley Cup, but entering that seventh game against Colorado when the quote-unquote anything can happen scenario pops in, I thought the Stars had two things in their back pocket. I thought they had a home ice advantage in their back pocket, and I thought they had Jake Ottinger's goaltending experience in their back pocket. I didn't think Mikko Rantanen was going to go, you know, Superman the way sure. he did. But you know what? At some point, Mackenzie Blackwood needs to make a save. Whether he's supposed to make it or not supposed to make it, your goaltender has to give you a save. Jake Ottinger gave them the saves, and if Mackenzie Blackwood could have found a way to stop one of those first two Mikko Rantanen goals, what kind of scenario are we talking about here? I don't know. But I think if you're a Stars fan, you are thankful you have Jake Ottinger entering this series, and then let the series go wherever it goes.
Yeah, I think the line I heard Otter say was, you know, I knew if I could just keep it at two that we had a chance once I saw the first goal, Mikko's first goal. And that's nice to say and think.
Yeah.
But to actually do it is a completely different thing, and that's what the Otter does. Now, Brian, that room, that arena, that crowd is a unique crowd here in DFW. The experience in that place must have been insane.
So obviously we didn't cover game seven. So I was at the game with a friend of mine, and we were sitting there watching, and I thought when they were doing the pregame intros and the start of the first period and the energy and the volume in the building, I was trying to figure out what was louder, the game seven against Colorado or the game seven last year against Vegas. Hmm. And I couldn't come up with a discernible difference either way. It was loud. I mean, it was insanely loud. But I was trying to figure out if I could compare or contrast those two. And I couldn't make a decision. When Rantanen scored the second goal, that was the loudest I have heard American Airlines Center in my 7 years covering the
wow.
team. That was the loudest moment that I've experienced. Now, like, I wasn't there for Cinco de Moro, you know, I wasn't there for some of the reunion days, you know, so I don't have that full spectrum. But in the last 7 years, the second Rantanen goal and then the Wyatt Johnston power play tally shortly after, that is the loudest experience I've had inside American Airlines Center.
Wow, what a special, special moment there.
That is super cool. Now,
we did see the news this morning.
That's what I was just thinking.
That's what I was telling you yesterday. I'm exhausted.
You're gonna do this again?
I'm exhausted already.
Hopefully three more times. Yeah.
Now, the Brian Ray joined us here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan. The news this morning from Pete DeBoer is that they are the Robertson and Miro are supposed to play in this series. Now, as Kevin was we pointed out earlier, we can't trust Pete DeBoer because he told us they would play in last series. But seriously, I'm still kind of trying to figure out how do you fit them back in in the way that this group and some of these lines played together.
So first of all, Kevin, welcome to the Stanley Cup playoffs. You can never trust a word that any coach or player says.
Definitely,
I get it. We live in a gambling world. Everybody wants all the information, you know, for whatever reason. I love it. I think you need to embrace the hilarity that is playoff coaching soundbites. We embraced it when Bill Belichick lied to everything involving the New England Patriots or wouldn't give anything up unless he was forced by the league. I think you have to laugh and embrace it. So I don't know when they're coming back. I don't know if they're coming back. I do know Miro Heiskanen continues to skate with this team on the ice and continues to push further and further. But I do understand when Peter DeBoer was forthcoming before Game 7 that it's not just a player feels good and you bring him back in. There are boxes that need to be checked when you're coming off an injury like Miro Heiskanen's. So we'll see what happens. For Miro Heiskanen, I think it's pretty easy that if he's able to come back, Alex Petrovic, who's been fantastic in the playoffs in his role coming up from the minors, he's the body that comes out, and then you have the flexibility. Do you put Miro with Thomas Harley and start loading up top pairing minutes? Do you put him with somebody else and ease him in? You can put him almost anywhere you want. The question I have with Miro Heiskanen, and I don't know which way Peter DeBoer is going to go. If Miro Heiskanen returns in this series, does he immediately jump back into the Stars' number one power play? Or do you let Thomas Harley continue driving that train? Because Harley has been excellent.
He's been special.
Quarterback in the number one power play unit. But Miro has also been very good. So that is a big question mark that I am curious to see if Miro Heiskanen comes back in this series, when he comes back in this series. Jason Robertson, if I had to guess, and this is purely a guess on my part, I think we're closer to seeing Heiskanen than we are Robertson. So I think there might still be a little bit of distance there. When Robertson comes back in, I don't know, because he's been the wingman to Roope Hintz for a handful of years now. But that line of Hintz, Rantanen, and Granlund, that segment of the Finnish Mafia has a real groove going on. And do you want to tinker with that entering the second round? I don't know. I do think could you move him down with Wyatt Johnston? Can Jamie Benn shift to the right side, or does Jamie Benn center the third line and Wyatt Johnston goes to the right side? I think there's a little more chess piece maneuvering that would have to go with Jason Robertson, but you're going to get him in the lineup regardless. But I think he might still be a little further off than Heiskanen. We'll see.
I don't know how much you concern yourself particularly with betting lines or anything like that, but ever since this matchup got set with the Stars in Winnipeg, there's been a shocking shift towards the Stars. Like, it looked kind of dead even, and now it is decidedly in the Stars' favor. It looks like a lot of money has poured in on them. We're just a few weeks away, removed from Winnipeg squashing the Stars. What do you think has changed so much about maybe perception in these last few weeks?
I'm not huge on the gambling lines. It's just not really my forte. But I do think this is as much of a pick 'em series as the Colorado series was. When I see, if a line moves that way, I feel like that's more they're trying to maneuver money to go in a different direction.
Okay.
And less what actually changes in the series compared to what we saw in the regular season, especially the last meeting. And now, I don't know how I'm going to try and put myself in the head of Vegas line setters, but we saw Connor Hellebuyck have a shaky series against the St. Louis Blues, and we saw the Dallas Stars just beat a Colorado team that the hockey world picked Colorado to win.
Yep.
I don't care what anybody says. The hockey world thought Colorado was going to win that series. We just saw Dallas beat a Colorado team that everybody thought was going to win without Jason Robertson and without Miro Heiskanen. So I think there's a little bit of recency bias that might be flooding that market. If you ask me today, this is as much of a 50-50 pick'em series as it was against Colorado. And we're going to learn a lot in the first two games. If Dallas can steal home ice advantage, we're going to learn a lot in the first two games. But I think this is as much of a coin flip as the last, which scares me because Dallas does not get Game 7 at home.
Yes.
Yeah.
Seven.
Thanks a lot,
so
St. Louis.
We're far off from that, but that's in the distance if this series goes the way a lot of people think it may go.
All right. If I can't sell you on betting lines, do you think the other reason it's going this way is because everybody knows about the curse of the President's Trophy and Winnipeg is inevitably doomed to lose in this round?
You know what? I'm curious if Vegas would consider something like that.
I bet they do.
It's real. It's real. It's absolutely real. I don't know if you guys watched Game 7 Winnipeg and St. Louis. I certainly did. Connor Hellebuyck looked like the switch flipped when Game 7 went to overtime for Winnipeg.
Yeah.
So you wonder, have demons been exercised or did you just get locked in to the most important point of that series? And then second of all, if you're the President's Trophy winner in Winnipeg, is this the scare that wakes you up and teaches you the level you're going to have to get to if you want to move this thing forward? Or did the St. Louis Blues open up a couple of chinks in your armor that Dallas is going to take a look at in their pre-scout ahead of this series? Remains to be seen. But the President's Trophy thing is real. We'll see. These are just two really equal teams at the top of the division that are going to fight. The king of the playground is going to be decided right here.
So that means you think it's going seven again?
I don't, man. I
hope not.
I don't want it to go seven.
I
think it's going at least six. I do believe it's going at least six. They're too evenly matched. They're too good on both sides.
And the Stars are going to win?
Well, of course.
Yeah, there you go.
I
needed that, though.
I'm just checking.
Thanks, Brian.
Man, thank you very much. Really appreciate the time and you keeping your turn signal in check today.
I appreciate it. I got to go get this Jersey Mike Cinco de Mayo deal now.
See?
I appreciate it.
Who is that for? All right. Thank you very much, Brian.
See you, guys.
There you go. Brian Ray right here on 105.3 The Fan. And I want to make this very clear. Jersey Mike's is delicious.
Yes,
their roast beef and provolone is amazing. The brownies they have are unbelievable. I just don't know if they're like, hey, Cinco de Mayo, so of course you're going to celebrate at Jersey Mike's.
Of course. Well, I mean, you got to eat.
You do.
You have to eat. You know. So
that's just maybe not what I immediately thought about. I want to read you a quote real quick.
Okay.
Because this quote goes back to golf. So Scottie Scheffler, he won the Byron Nelson. He won in dominating fashion. Did you see what Jordan Spieth said? He goes, what he's been doing is inspiring. Given it wasn't that long ago, I was definitely better than him.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm definitely not.
Yeah.
I hate admitting that about anybody, but I just watched those first two rounds and I've got to get better. It's very inspiring. I just appreciate Spieth because it's very rare that you get that kind of candor of, I was definitely better than him, and now there's no question he's better than me. I just appreciate that level of honesty.
I'll be honest, man. The more I've heard Jordan Spieth talk over the time that I've been able to see him and observe him, the more I think that dude has it all figured out when it comes to this whole process of it all. He seems real, and that's the thing I think I like the most about him. And I hope he does get better for him and for us locally here too.
And I'm looking at the clock and, oh my gosh, I feel like we got time for about 60 seconds on soccer.
All right, let's do it.
Are you excited about Bayern Munich winning the Bundesliga?
Oh, of course.
It is Harry Kane's first major trophy of his senior career.
Are you serious?
Yes. He's 31. He has long been appreciated as one of the better, if not one of the best players in all of international soccer. Finally gets the first major trophy of his senior career. How locked in were you to this game? And did you know that it had happened?
Man, Harry Kane is one of those guys that I've always just kind of rooted for. You know, he just kind of has that vibe about him that you're like, dude, and he's extreme talent too.
Sure.
So for him to finally get this means a lot. This would be kind of, Kevin, kind of like Jamie Benn getting a cup. Like, this is how much it meant to me watching that team do that. That's how it would feel if Jamie Benn won the cup. Hey, all this time he spent, all the love and passion I had, And finally, he gets that professional championship.
There is no way that meant as much to you as it would for Jamie Benn. By the way,
always has.
I have crunched the numbers on the old guys without a cup rating. We will dive into that tomorrow to discuss Jamie Benn. But in the meantime, guess what? Let's go back to cut number four. One of my favorite cuts of the entire year. This is the Stars closing it down against Winnipeg.
15.2 to go. Colorado the last 11 shot attempts. Makar kept it in. Free puck. Lindell didn't get good wood on it, but Sagan got it out. Rantanen again. Unbelievable. A legendary performance by Rantanen against his former team.
Look, I meant against Colorado.
Of course,
obviously,
you did.
I've already gotten too cocky.
We're
to
already
think that
ahead
we're
of ourselves. Yeah, I like it.
Winnipeg, and this is the tough thing. So I go back to something that Brian Ray said and an article in the Morning News. Is Mikko Rantanen's Game 7, does it merit a spot on the Mount Rushmore of Dallas playoff individual performances? So, like, not your career, not all time player, just individual playoff performances. And I want to say yes. Because, like, we already talked about the history he made. Hey, here's another thing. Mikko Rantanen became the second player in NHL history with a four-point period in Game 7, joining Kevin LeBanc. Maybe LeBanc, if you're not fancy. In,
used to be on Friends.
In 2000, that is Matthew LeBlanc, in 2019. So yet another thing. So he made NHL history, helped the Dallas Stars make NHL history. And here's another thing that he's tied for the best of all time. The thing that's keeping me from saying for sure is it was the first round.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they lose to Winnipeg, this is amazing, but I feel like it's going to get lost.
I completely agree with you because this you want this to be the step that launched them on to the next thing. Like, they always will always believe, you know what, we can win at any point in any game. You know, like, that's what you want to happen. Well, hell, Kevin, last night the Winnipeg coach used the Stars as an example to inspire his team to go out there and win in overtime. Hey, look, you know, I know we're down right now, but we can absolutely do what the Stars just went out there and did too. So I agree with you. It could be left behind right now. The people that were in that arena will never forget it.
Yeah.
And I think for us too, like, it's such a special thing. You just kind of wonder if Colorado's sitting there going, we should have paid the $500K.
By the way, did you see the debate that broke out on social media about how it wasn't really 500K because the income tax structure in the different states? And I was like, again, I agree with that. I don't know how many players are doing tax work to go into it. I don't know.
And the 214, Evaldi's Game 5 in the World Series.
Okay, and that makes a lot of sense to me. One of the ones I was going to throw out there is Emmitt against the Packers in the NFC Championship game. I think it was 95. 35 carries, 150 yards, 3 touchdowns. And, like, I can say that directly got you to the Super Bowl. Now, if the Stars win the Cup, it's going to be weird. This is going back to round one. But then I think this performance takes on mythical.
It's the Jordan Montgomery game.
Yes.
You know, Jordan Montgomery dives for that ball against Tampa in the first round of the playoffs.
And you're like, that did everything.
And, yeah, exactly. You're thinking this changes. The whole team got inspired by what they just saw. Big man going and making a move like that. So it absolutely could launch into something else for sure.
What about Dirk in 2011 on the march to the championship? You could probably pick a lot. I'm going to focus in on the Thunder game. He scored 48 points on 15 shots.
Wow.
Now,
that's the epitome of efficiency.
Because he was driving to the basket again and again and again. He was 24 for 24 on free throws.
Jeez.
And so, like, that's another one that I think of, like, you're the next step to get into the championship round. And so whether it's Evaldi, Dirk, Emmitt, these are some of the, I mean, you can even go back to Troy Aikman in the Super Bowl against the Bills. He had 4 touchdown passes. Like, those are the ones that I immediately put up there. But I wonder if the Stars go all the way, if this will make it onto the Mount Rushmore.
It should, because of it. It's such a special thing. The first time in the NHL history that, you know, all these things that you're pointing out. And then, Kevin, that's the other question I'm kind of asking you regarding this Mount Rushmore. The Wyatt Johnston goal, a couple things here. I'm watching it right now. It's right in front of me on the McAfee show. The puck jammed him.
Yeah.
For one. And then the window got smaller for that puck to get in.
That angle was amazing.
And he still was able to make that happen. And Kevin, now in game sevens, you can just rely on Pete DeBoer is going to win and Wyatt Johnston's going to score a goal.
Yeah, because Wyatt Johnston hasn't lost any game sevens with the Stars either.
He's scored two game winners in game sevens now, and he's scored three in the three game sevens he's been in. So this is, for me, that moment of, that's as big of a moment as what Rantanen did, but you can't get there without.
Yeah.
So it goes back to the Corey Seager, Adolis Garcia. Adolis Garcia hit the home run that won,
man,
but Corey Seager hit the home run that tied it up in the ninth.
It does feel impossible to leave those off the list as well. Oh, we need to make Mount Rushmore bigger. Maybe somebody's working on that. So you mentioned the Wyatt Johnston goal. That was another thing, much like you see with the dunk contest sometimes, that I'm so glad that they showed the slow-mo replay of it. Because when I first saw the goal, I was like, well, of course, he better hit that goal because he's wide open off a sweet pass right to him. He's wide open. But to Corey's point, when you watch it upon further inspection, he might have been wide open, but that gap between the goalie and the goal and just the axis that you had to shoot that in,
yeah,
it was absolutely incredible.
DeBoer said afterwards, he said, you know, the window for it to go in was small. The amount of skill that it took to make that is off the charts. And real quick, though, I also watched the post games with Otter and with Wyatt Johnston. Wyatt's great.
He is.
You just love this kid, for one. My favorite part, though, is go back and watch it if you can. He has this little cut on his nose, and while he's doing the interview, the blood just starts to kind of slowly run down to the tip of his nose until he realizes it. And then at that moment, that's when I was like, oh, he's in his head now, wondering if he's got to keep cleaning this thing.
And this is what I struggle with, because from the 4-6-9, don't forget the Dutch oven and the World Series. I struggle with like that because that definitely should be on there. But the thing with Emmett, I could directly show you how that led to a title. Same with Aikman, same with Evaldi, same with Montgomery or Seager or Adolis. And that's the tough thing about that is you ended up getting pretty wiped out in that series against the Giants. And so that should be on there. And maybe I should like rethink how I put the people on that list.
Yeah, no, for sure. And what's really interesting here is, Kevin, do you remember on that cup run in 99, an offensive performance that stood out like this? Because for me, I think it was Belfour's run that really, kept standing out there, in that he was denying everything. And they, like, you had Madonna, you had Neuendijk, you had Langenbrunner, all those guys were doing their job, and it just felt like they were a team doing that. They didn't have an individual performance that I can say stands out like
that. See, that's an interesting point, because I think about Brett Hull scoring in triple overtime, but I don't think, man, that series, he scored 12 goals.
Right, exactly.
Like, I don't think about it like that. That's an interesting point. By the way, Brett Hull won that cup with the Stars. He also used to play for the Blues. Let's go back to that Winnipeg game. Go ahead and give me cut number 14. We're in double overtime. But how we got to double overtime is a whole nother story. But I want to play the game winner for Winnipeg.
Hard pass down low. Connor back up the boards for Pionk. Pionk shoots. Score! The Jets win it! On the deflection! The Winnipeg Jets will move on to face the Dallas Stars.
You know, it was really wild on that goal, Kevin. The first shot whiffed.
Yeah.
Like, the first dude whiffs on the shot, and at that moment, you feel like everybody's got to be, the whole defense on that team's got to be going, oh, yeah, we got this. These guys can't even hit the puck. And then they still get it back around so you can make that.
They talk about planning and reaction in hockey so much. Every now and again, I think you would be well-suited from a hockey perspective to just fake miss the shot. Because everybody moves in one direction and you see goals off of that because they're like, well, that's not what was supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, St. Louis dominated control of that game. They were ahead 3-1 with 2 minutes left in the game in regulation. St. Louis scores, make it 3-2. That's fine. You got to hold them off for about another 1:50. St. Louis scored again with like 2.0 seconds left. Winnipeg scored again. My apologies. Winnipeg scored again with 2-point-something seconds left to tie the game, and now they've won. So when we talk about like individual franchises and Mount Rushmores, I'm sure that with Perfetti, they look at it and they're like, that's one of our legendary performances. You scored with a little bit more than 2 seconds left to keep us in the game.
Yeah.
Make sure we didn't get bounced as the best team in the NHL in the first round and then now move on. So if they go on a run, they're looking at their own guys doing something historic.
Yeah, but again, Kevin, they had to use the Stars as their example for reminding themselves that they could do it.
True. So, very true.
So the Stars are their daddy.
Always comes back to Dallas. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan.
Let's give something away!
877-881-1053. Yes! Caller number 10 will win a pair of tickets to Where the Party At when Nelly comes to the Dos Equis Pavilion on September 5th. You can, of course, buy tickets or you can win them for free right now. Caller number 10, 877-881-1053. Going to be doing that giveaway all week long. Coming up next, it's the C Block.
Most toxic college football fan base is out there, and I'm a pretty good guy. You shouldn't arrest me. Oh. Next on The Fan.